ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Welcome to Bear Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the Bear Bow Hunter's lifestyle.
Hey guys, before we jump into this podcast, I've been getting a lot of emails lately on people asking me how they could help support the Life Outdoors and Bear Bow Hunters. Well, I came up with a couple ways you could do that. We still have a few Bear Bow Hunter hats. We just got some in stock, and so we're still selling those off of Bear Bow Hunter website, so www.bearbowhunters.com. And also, we have started a new soap, and it's called Backcountry Bar. And this, it's something that we have been looking to do for quite a while. We wanted a biodegradable soap that you could take into the backcountry or use at home, that it was completely natural. Even down to our colorings are natural. It's charcoal and spinach that color it. So we have that on the Life Outdoors website, and you can go over there and check that out, and any one of those things will help us keep bringing this content to you guys. So we appreciate you guys listening. We appreciate you guys checking out our YouTube stuff and our Facebook stuff and our Instagram stuff. But if you want to help, I'm going to answer those questions for you guys that have been asking me. If you want to help out, you just go to the Life Outdoors or Bear Bow Hunters, and you can do that. Thank you. Now let's get on with this podcast. All right. Welcome to another edition of Bear Bow Hunters Podcast. And today we have with us Jason, and I'm going to call you Wojo, okay?
Yeah, that's what everybody calls me, Nate. That's not a problem, dude.
Jason Wojo from Tough Heads. And you bought the company, right? How does that work? Tell us about Tough Head.
Okay, so Tough Head... everyone's heard this, you know, on other spots or anything, but, you know, I'll try to keep it brief. But Tough Head has been around for a little over a decade. I got real involved with the company over the last 3 years or so. I've always shot Tough Heads in my traditional career, which was pretty easy for me to look into taking over the company. Anyways, about 2 years ago, I officially took over. I didn't buy the company. I bought the rights and the manufacturing and all the design and everything like that, and incorporated into my own company. So, you know, I took over the reins and took over production and marketing and all that stuff.
Right on. Okay, I see. And so with Tough Head kind of came around on the belief of some of Ed Ashby's studies. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So Joe, the original owner, Joe Furlong, he was a longtime traditional bow hunter. And like a lot of us traditional bow hunters, he got into the Ed Ashby studies and started falling into it and realized there wasn't too many products on the market that follow that, belief. So Joe made it his life goal later in his life there to create, you know, we'll call it an Ashby, you know, approved broadhead. So that's what drove that with Joe. And I, you know, my hat's off to him for what he, you know, what he had to do to make this happen. But what it was. This head was designed around the original Ashby studies from years ago.
Right, right. And I've shot the metal heads. You have two different heads right now, or am I correct?
Yeah. There's two. Well, there's three different heads per se. There's the Tough Heads, which are the 225 and the 300. The Tough Heads are the stainless steel. So those two were the original broadheads. They were the 225 and the 300 were the original designed broadheads. And then later, and I don't know the exact timeline, but then he came out with a Meathead, which is a carbon steel version, and it's a little bit lighter of a version. So there's those three versions, and then we make the screw-in versions that are basically me setting an insert, a weighted insert, and welding, resistance welding them in the place to give a screw-in option.
Right, right. And part of that that I found that I think is pretty cool is that insert goes in a little ways, so the head actually goes over the tip of the arrow where it screws
Correct.
In.
Correct. Yeah, and that is, again, that's part of what, one of Ashby's factors, penetration factors, 12 penetration factors, is to have your arrow smaller in diameter than your broadhead furl. That's the furl opening. So Joe pushed it one step further and made that furl so big that you can actually use a 3/8 dowel rod into that arrow, because he knew a lot of guys were going to be hunting Cape Buffalo and grizzlies with these style heads. So, yeah, if you take that head and put it a 204, like an Eastern Axis or a Sirius Apollo arrow in there, I mean, it really... There's such little resistance through that shaft. That's why a lot of guys pass through, I mean, with complete ease with our broadheads and modern arrows.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, I'm a firm believer in the Ashby stuff. And I kind of got away from it for a little while because I was having issues with my shooting. You know, you get out past a certain range, and with the bows I was shooting, just that drop past 25 yards is a huge drop when you're shooting those heavy arrows.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But I upped my bow a little bit, and then I figured out that, you know, I just don't need to be shooting that yardage.
Well, yeah, and that's just it. I mean, you know, a lot of guys are so, you know, a lot of people worry about that drop in trajectory. And like you said, you know, you don't really start seeing it until 25 yards, you know.
Right.
But, you know, what exactly is your realistic hunting range, especially with traditional gear?
Yeah.
You know, and what a lot of people need to understand, too, is a heavy mass arrow carries that momentum and that mass further downrange as well, where a lighter arrow drops its mass and its impact force the further it goes. So, you know, there's a trade-off there.
Right, right.
And that's why a lot of compound guys are starting to get into this. I mean, they're diving in full tilt because they're realizing, oh, man, you know, I have way more impact force at that 40-yard mark that is, you know, is my realistic hunting range.
Yep.
I mean, it's a lethal setup.
Yeah, I have a friend. They shot a elk frontal, and I think he shoots a, oh, man, I would like to say it's over 28-inch draw on a compound. And, and he shot an elk frontal, and it came out its back in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think he's shooting somewhere around 600 grain arrow and, you know, cut on contact heads and has that higher FOC figured out. And I'll tell you, my son, he shot a bull this year and he completely passed through, and he was shooting a 550 grain arrow.
Yep.
And, you know, and so the compound guys have figured it out too. And it's funny too, because a lot of the compound guys that I'm around that are shooting the heavier arrows are like, well, you know, I'm only gaining like 10 yards, 12 yards, or 15 yards.
Yeah.
I think I might start shooting my trad bow.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, and it was cool this year. I made a bad shot on an elk this year, and that went all the way through and broke the... I shot him too far back. He spun on me. But, if I was shooting a light arrow, I probably would have not killed that elk. I might have killed it, but not got it, right?
And yeah, right.
And it went all the way through and then broke his back leg.
Yeah, sure.
Crazy,
sure.
Crazy stuff. And, and that made me a believer. I mean, I've always seen it, and I've, you know, a pass-through is a pass-through. But I think at our true hunting ranges, you know, maybe lighten up for target stuff. But at our hunting ranges, man, throwing those big heavy arrows out there and a good broadhead sharp and you know, single bevel, oh man.
Yeah, it's lethal. It's definitely lethal. I mean, and when we say heavy setups, like you were referring back to compound, I mean, 550 is a heavy setup for a compound. I mean, that'll kill just about anything you go after. So, and that's what I have a conversation just about every day with a compound guy that calls me. You know, we custom tailor a setup that they can still keep, because a lot of guys are hunting mule deer or you know, a lot of these compound guys are hunting elk, but they can reach out to 50 yards, you know, especially hunting mule deer in open country. So, and I get that, man. I get you still want to keep some trajectory. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't have to be 650 grains or 700
right.
grains, you know, I mean, with these compound guys. But now traditional guys is different. But our ranges are, like you said, 25 and in, if it's even at it sometimes. I mean, most guys, unless you're hunting mule deer, and I always use mule deer for an example because a lot of mule deer live in open country.
Right.
So
yeah.
you're going to want to stretch out. But if you're hunting elk or whitetail or pigs or even moose, man, you know, go as heavy as you feel comfortable with because your shots are going to be within 20 yards
yeah.
most of the time.
I tell you, you know, we try to call the elk in really close because, I mean, once you get that,
yeah,
there's nothing like it. And
yeah, right, right.
You know, and turkeys are another one that sometimes being able to reach out there is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I have a friend that he killed his turkey at about 35 yards with a it was a Valkyrie system and a heavy mm-hmm. system and
mm-hmm.
we were almost like, wow, that was kind of way overkill. But it was one shot, you know, and I've seen some
yeah.
I guide turkeys here in Oregon and I've seen guys shoot them 5-6 times with, you know,
yeah.
cut on with mechanical heads and light arrows
yeah.
and it's just crazy.
Turkeys are pretty tough.
I mean,
they're they are kind of the targeted animal for a wider cut broadhead because their vitals are so small. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you got to shoot a tough head at a turkey because it's really, I mean, you're probably better off with a wider head, but I have guys doing it all the time. But
yeah.
Turkeys are, they're a tough animal. I mean, they really are a tough animal to kill because that vital area is so small and there's so much voided area in those things.
Yeah.
Especially a puffed up palm. I mean, you know, you really got to put a
cut a lot of feathers.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, yeah, turkey's a whole different animal,
yeah.
you know, a whole different ball game. Yeah.
You know, I will add this though. If you are hunting with, I'm kind of like the one rifle guy too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you hunt with one setup, you should hunt everything with that setup. Cause then you know it. And
I agree. Yeah, I don't disagree.
And tough heads, you know, the thing about tough head, you guys, the guys listening to this that haven't held one, they need to hold one because the thing about tough head is how, I mean, there's a lot of cutting contact there.
Oh yeah.
What is that? 3 inches, 3.5 inches.
Yeah. And that's what we keep trying to preach to some people. You know, so yeah, it's 3/16 long, so you have 3 inches of cutting on each side. You know, it's not, you don't always go by the width of the broadhead, you know, that all that edge is cutting through the animal. The more contact, the more surface contact on an animal's tissue, the better. So that's why, I mean, you know, the most animals that get shot with a 3-to-1 style or we'll say my tough heads, they're dying.
Yeah,
regardless of blood trails or anything, they are dying.
Yep.
Because there's just so much lethality going through that animal, so much cutting surface. Everyone's all hooked up always on the width of the broadhead, the width of the broadhead.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't always mean anything because the big downfall with the width is your deflection rate is huge.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an off-cambered shot, an off-angled shot, and you hit a rib bone, man, you're going to get some major deflection out of a wide cut.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, well, you just look at it this way. If you're, say you're cutting cheese with a knife, if you have a short knife and you can only push it an inch,
yeah,
you're going to have to go back and forth several times to cut that piece of cheese. If you have a 10-inch knife and you run it through once, it's going to cut it off.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, people don't understand that. There's a broadhead out there, and I won't mention it, but I've seen, I don't know how many animals hit, and some of them marginal hits, right?
Yeah.
With that broadhead, but I've only seen like two animals die from it. And the one, a couple of those hits, they should have just, you know, it should have been no problem, but they hit them a little high in the lungs or whatever. And the cutting surface on that thing's only like, you know, 15/16 of an inch or something. And
yeah.
And I just, man, I don't know. I've never seen a 3-to-1 not do its job. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just it. And like you were saying, to go back to you were saying one setup, you know, I'm a very firm believer in, you know, get used to shooting, you know, say 300-grain broadheads. And that's one reason why our new line, we have a 3-blade as well as a 2-blade to match that weight. So you know, you can kind of, you can tune everything with that front end weight, and then depending on the animal you're going after, you can, you know, you can put the appropriate broadhead on. So that was part of the reasoning behind some of our design on that new style head.
Right. Yeah. And I know you guys got some new stuff coming, and I know you don't probably don't want to talk a lot about some of the new stuff, but the stuff that's getting close, would you like to talk about some of that?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, yeah. I mean, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah. I know you got some new heads coming out, and I've seen it on Instagram. And forgive me here because I don't know the names, but could you tell us a little bit about what you're working on?
Yeah, so we there's a few different things. First, the big project from last year till this year is our Evolution series, which really made a right hand turn with the way Toughheads are, the original Toughheads. The original Toughheads are 3-to-1; they're a pressed laminated broadhead. They're hand built basically. I wanted to expand Toughhead because there is good designs out there that work if they're designed properly. So we went down a couple of different roads. So we settled with the Evolution series as a one-piece monolithic machined head. And we created it in two different weights, a 200 and a 300 grain weight. The 200 grain is a shorter, stockier style. That one we designed for your mule deer, even your elk hunter and down, that the compound guys. We put flight characteristics into the design, all that stuff, and this thing is extremely accurate. Up to 60, 70 yards, extremely accurate. I still, internal a tree company at heart to have a monolithic traditional head. So that was the 300 grain version is more of a traditional style. Monolithic head. So that's what we came out with, and we really played with the designs on them so that they, for the style of animal we designed them for, we made them as lethal as possible for that style of hunting. And we also created a three blade, which is really a tough head, but I've been getting asked for the last 3 years to design a three blade, and really there's not too many ways to redesign a three blade. So we just took everybody's three blades, tore them apart and tried to figure out, well, how do we make this a better system? And number one, we used the S7 tool steel like we're using in the whole Evolution line. And we shortened it down. We stretched it, and we, because obviously with tough head, penetration and structural integrity is our highest standard. So, we put a lot of thought in and redesign, we'll say, the thought on the three blade. So, and we got really good results with the three blade. The 200 grain especially, the flight characteristics that we, with the design that we implemented into that, is super, super accurate, man. Because one thing we found with three blades is they'll float at a distance, yeah, depending on the whether width or whatever. They love to float and drift. So we tried to go back to the drawing board to figure out why. So we like to think we figured it out. We put some aerodynamic channeling in it.
I saw that
part of the rib. Yeah, it was just a small thing. What we do is we raised that inner rib. Number one, that added structural integrity, but it gave us the ability to dish it out. And if you look at a lot of mechanical broadheads, one reason why they fly so well is there's not a big fin hanging out there, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at the cones, the points on mechanical broadheads, they have that dish on them.
Yep.
They're like funneled out. Well, the reason why is at high speeds and long distance, that stabilizes that arrow and it's in right where it's supposed to go. So we took that and put it in the inner rib of the three blade. So I'll tell you what, it worked wonders. There is no rise, there's no float. These things are just driving in where they're supposed to.
Right on.
So we're actually pretty happy about the three blade. I actually took a really nice whitetail buck with it this year, and it just, with my traditional setup and everything, and I used the 300 grain, and it just blew right through. I mean, just like it was a two blade. I mean, I was really impressed.
Right. So when would you recommend the three blade over the two blade, like in brushy stuff?
Everyone asks me that. Hey, I'm going to get the 200 grain. Which one should I get? And that's like, man, really, if I was going after elk and up, I probably wouldn't use the three blade.
Yeah.
Only because you really got to worry about bone splitting and penetration, right? We want to penetrate. We want to stack the odds in our favor as a bow hunter. So, but you know, whitetail hunters, even mule deer hunters, because of the flight characteristics, that 200 grain, I mean, it really, it's a toss up. It's just, you know, there's a lot of people out there, Nate, that just are tried and true three blade hunters.
Yeah.
That's what they use.
Yep.
I mean, there's been a couple guys I've stumbled across in my design, which actually helped me in some design attributes, that, man, they've hunted Cape Buffalo with three blades, and they love them. They swear by them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell someone where to spend their money. I'm just giving you the options, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just tell them, hey, buy both. Buy the matching set, right? Buy the 200-grain single and the 200-grain three blade.
Play with them.
And and you can figure out what you want to do there. I mean, you can tune it in, like we said. You can tune it in. You can hunt your whitetails, and then you can go hunt your elk and just use the same weight, right? You know, it's all tuned.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm you know how many guys I know that have killed, I don't know how many elk with like a snuffer or with a with a woodsman, you know? And so the three blade, people, you could get on the internet and you get people that are pretty passionate about all sides of that.
I know. And that's why I'm not going to sit here.
Yep.
And,
me too.
Which kind of goes back to our conversation before we started recording. I'm not going to get into the drama and the arguments.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. You can make anything in your favor, right? Your argument can always go in your favor. But that's why we did it. But if I was going to bring it to market, the three blade, I wanted to make sure
it was
hit
a good
all
one.
My marks.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And actually, I'm pretty proud of it, to be honest with you.
It's a cool head.
It is really a cool head. And it's going to be in my quiver. I will probably hunt whitetails with it in PA. Since it did so well for me last year, that's probably going to be my whitetail head this year.
Gotcha.
The two blades are going to be my buffalo, my elk. If I go after pig again, that'll be my single bevels on those hunts. But the whitetails, I think, you know, whitetails are pretty soft, Nate. I think you know that. I mean, they're not. I mean, crushing a bone in a whitetail isn't that difficult.
Right.
You know, even if you pass through the first shoulder, you know, if you hit the off shoulder, depending on your poundage and your arrow weight, you're going to take that animal out. I mean, you're pretty good.
We
decreased that cutting diameter, so you know that gave us the ability to rake that blade out. So now you have a higher or a less deflection rate with our three blade too. So
You know, and quite honestly, even an elk on the back end of that, you know, I've shot a lot of elk scapulas, and on the back end of that, I was putting, you know, field points through those scapulas, and it's when you start getting into that heavy bone that you need that deflection. It's you know, so I mean, deer size, so there's times I would shoot a three blade, say we got some areas down here that the brush is so heavy that you want to get that blood going as quick as you can.
Because
if you, they may leave a huge blood trail, but it'll be 20 foot off of the trail and it'll be really hard to find. So if you could get it going right at the shot.
Exactly.
A three blade does help.
Right. And that is a common issue with single bevels, no matter ours or whoever makes a single bevel. These animals do bleed. They do leave a blood trail. Just sometimes they don't start bleeding for about 15 yards, 20 yards.
Yep.
So, you know, you got to really watch that animal the instant you shoot it, see how it reacts, see which way it goes, get on the ground and start reading the tracks.
Yep.
And then you can get on your blood trail typically. But you're right, the three blade, I mean, when I hit mine, it passed through. There was blood within 5 yards of that animal. And I found it. I mean, it died within, I think, 60 yards. It went up over the hill and passed out. So,
And of course, you know,
right.
The best blood trail, of course, is two holes, but,
absolutely.
You know, so I adjust according to whatever I'm, and then turkeys, of course, I think a three blade on turkeys is kind of nice.
Exactly. And I was going to get to that, but I would, if you're hunting turkeys primarily, then I'd say just go with a three blade.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of turkeys get shot with a lot of different bows, and I will. We shot. There was a guy that came down, and he shot this turkey 5 times, and he shot them all with the Rage, the big Rage, like the 2 inchers, right?
Yeah.
And not one of those broadheads opened up.
Yeah, I've heard that too many times. Unfortunately, I've never used the mechanical ever, even back in when I started with compounds. I just always knew cutoff contact was more lethal.
Now, I feel really bad here because then I went and hunted with another guy that shot a Rage, and that broadhead opened up. And it was crazy what it did when it did open up. For turkeys, sure. I would never – and it broke a blade in a turkey, so –
They're lethal when they work. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm not gonna share.
Right.
I'm not gonna argue the fact that they don't work. When they work, they work.
Yeah.
Soft tissue damage and all that.
Soft tissue.
They work.
Yeah. But
soft tissue. That's the big thing there. Soft tissue.
What I figured out is, and he showed me, is they got a little metal deal at the bottom, and you got to line those up with the blades. And that other guy didn't have his lined up. He just screwed them on.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's a lot of what's happening with those.
Yeah, sure. Huh.
But I have seen, so I've seen three blades, and a Valkyrie is on the same idea as yours.
Yeah. Valkyrie's an awesome broadhead. As a matter of fact, when I bought all of them, I really was impressed with the Valkyrie. I'm not going to lie. It was a very, very awesome head. Out of all the three blades on the market other than mine, I mean, I would buy the Valkyrie if you want my opinion. It's an awesome broadhead. It really is.
Good
awesome
arrow,
broadhead.
Too. They're a good arrow.
Yeah. Their whole system's really nice. I mean, they definitely have a very nice system going over there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I kind of like the screw-in idea, though, myself, just because it's easier if I have problems. So
sure.
That's
the
reason.
You're right.
I went with what I go with. But, so your Evolution single bevel series. What sizes do those come in?
So right now there is a 300 grain, which is traditional. There's the 200 grain, which is we're calling it the modern style broadhead. It's a little bit shorter, stockier.
Right.
The long term plan is to have those two models in weights from 300 to 150.
Oh wow!
In both models. Now it's going to take some years. We're a very small company. Yeah. We're growing. So every year we have to spend money in certain directions, right?
Right.
So we go with the way the market is showing is what we try to do.
Right.
Next year we will introduce another weight in those models, right? So then we'll just keep constantly growing them. But we designed these first two around we're going to say they were the original designs, right? So we had to take what the market is and around that weight for those two style heads, and then like I said, we can adjust them there.
Right.
So that's what that was. So we do plan on making more of them, and of course the three blade will hopefully match with them. And as a disclaimer, before anybody asks you or me again, no, I will not make a 125. Okay. Everybody, we are a heavyweight broadhead company. I feel you start entering the heavy weights when you hit 150.
Yeah.
And then every 50 grains you go up, you've held them on your hand. You just start feeling more and more and more lethal as you hold them.
Yeah.
So, 150 is a big jump from 125. So,
yeah.
We will go down to 150 at some point. And then, like I said, go up to 300. So, we feel that those are lethal, ethical weights for bow hunting. So
yeah, and that, so you guys 200, that sucker looks strong. They all look strong.
Yeah,
but that almost looks, if I was shooting a compound, I would be looking really hard at that. How long is that thing?
So it's 1.4 inches long by an inch and 3/16 wide. So we went in between an inch and an eighth and an inch and a quarter. That way we can, and a lot of this was driven by design. Okay.
Right.
It was driven by what's the intent and how are we going to get this thing to maximize the potential of it? So that's where, we didn't just draw this on paper and say, this is what we want to make. We really went, and then with U7 steel, which, if you're familiar with tool steels, it is extremely, extremely tough. I mean, it's a shock resistant impact tool steel.
I'm losing a little bit of you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I all right?
Hey, you're good now. So yeah, can you say that again with what kind of steel it is?
Okay. So with the Evolutions, they're all S7. S7 tool steel.
Gotcha.
S7 tool steel is an extremely hard impact shock resistant steel. So it's made for impacts. It's actually made They make jackhammer bits out of it. I mean, it is an extremely hard steel. So we tried a bunch of different steels, but we kept coming back and settling on the S7 due to its strength.
Nice.
So that helped us in two ways. Number one, it kept structural integrity extremely high, which you know is very important. And it also gave us the ability to push the boundaries and go with a 20-degree bevel, not your standard 25 or 30-degree bevel on a single bevel.
Right.
We really wanted to bring that attribute into it for a few different reasons, but we had to use the right steel to accomplish that.
Gotcha. And so what do you guys use to sharpen them with? When you're talking, you know, some of these heavier steels and things like that, just a normal diamond sharpener or what?
Yeah,
what do you guys like?
Yeah, absolutely you can. Yeah, I mean, you got to put a little extra elbow grease into any kind of tool steel
sure.
out there, like ours or Iron Will.
Right.
Velcro uses a nice tool steel. You know, even VPA uses a tool steel. So you got to put a little extra elbow grease in it. You just have to. It's just part of the thing. You know, if you want a strong broad hitch, you got to do. But we played with the heat treat, you know, for a while. So we treated it, we tempered it as light as we could to make it manageable to resharpen.
Right.
But still strong enough to take the abuse it's going to take. So, and that was another reason why we brought the 20-degree bevel in. That 20-degree bevel, you just look at it and it's sharp. I'm telling you, it is extremely sharp when it's not sharp. So
right.
It makes resharpening so much easier. You can feel that that edge, that bevel edge, and you can basically do it by hand. You don't need anything
yeah.
sophisticated to sharpen it. Yeah. So that was very important to us because we want everybody to be able to maintain their product. You know what I mean?
Right.
We like to feel that you're buying a tough head as like an heirloom broadhead, right? Like you'd buy a $1,500 recurve bow with an engraving on it. I mean, we want you to have it for a long time, so we want you to be able to maintain it. So that always goes into our thought when we design things.
Yeah, have a broadhead that speaks, so you could show people, hey, look, you know what?
Yeah.
In 2020, we killed something with this, and then 2021, it's this one.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what I've always done. Whenever I kill something,
yeah.
I keep the broadhead and I keep the arrow, and it actually goes into my trophy case. You know, because it has a story. You know, I kind of retire it once it's killed something. No, I mean, I can use them again and again, but to me, that's just something, you know, that when I have grandkids or something, you sit down yeah. in the den and you talk about all the deer heads and everything, and then you can show them the arrow.
Oh, yeah.
It yeah. helps you relive everything. So yeah,
part of that tradition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I always did, so I kind of always have that thought in my head, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And another thing, though, is, and I know guys that do this, is they'll use the same head over and over, and that's their
yeah.
first arrow. And that,
yeah,
that kind
of,
you know, and that's kind of tradition as well. If you think about it, that's kind
absolutely.
Of the old school stuff of, you know, knights and way back, you know, the archers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, and knowing that, that's why I wanted to make sure that our broadheads are easy to maintain, right? You know what I mean? You
yeah.
can even do them in the field if you have to. That's yeah. why we have that little bevel sharp sharpener and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we want you to, you're making an investment. That's what we look at. I mean, you know, the Evolution series is not a cheap throwaway broadhead.
Right.
They're not.
Right.
And they do come with a little bit higher of a premium because of a lot of the design, the machining, the material we're using.
Yeah.
So, you know, they do come with a little bit of a premium.
Oh, yeah. Anytime that you machine something out of tool
yeah.
steel,
yeah.
And then, it's gonna be more. But it's kind of, I do the same thing with, I get guys all the time saying, hey, man, what about your grizzly sticks? You know, I'm the kind of guy that tries to keep things as economical as possible for people because there's a lot of guys out there that get into this stuff and they, you know, young families and this and that. And
yeah.
they always ask me about grizzly stick because grizzly sticks are pretty expensive arrows.
And, yeah, they are.
And they asked me and I said, well, let me tell you this. I've had grizzly sticks for the last 3 years and I have yet to break one. Mm. How many of my other arrows have I broken? You know?
Right. Yeah, you're
it's
right.
It's the same idea.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's
yeah.
value. It's not just cheap. It's value.
Right. And, you know, at the end of the day, too, Nate, that arrow from the broadhead all the way back that is what's killing that animal. Yep. Not your bow. Yep. Not your clothes.
Yep.
That is what is killing that animal. I mean, that you should put the most thought and the most effort into building that arrow from the broadhead all the way back to the fletchings, you know, with the highest level of structural integrity.
Yep.
If that means that you got to hold off on buying a new Kuyu jacket this year, then that's what you got to do. That's how I feel about
it. Yeah. Oh, I do too. And you know, as much, well, anybody sitting here listening to the podcast really digs this stuff, and as much time and effort as you put into this, why would you skimp there? And that's always been my idea, you know, is why would you shoot? All it takes is not drinking coffee, Starbucks coffee nobody drinks Starbucks, right? not drinking a store-bought coffee, just brew your own. And
it's
stuff like that that we start looking at and we start thinking about when we talk in these broadheads and your gear. I've been trying to do a lot of different things here arrow-wise, trying to figure out a way to create an arrow that performs close to some of the, you know, the higher end arrows, and I'm having a hard time getting it done. I don't think you can. So my idea now is, and I've seen what these arrows have done, and you know, I don't know. Me personally, that's where I'm going to put my money, you know, and and I don't know. It's just one of those things. One of the ways that we sharpen ours out in the field is we use that WorkSharp guided sharpener with it's got diamond edges. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
I think so.
Yeah. And I would love to put one of those across one of these higher steels. I'm using stainless steel and it works great on stainless. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking to move my setup this next year, and it'd be cool to see how that works on with the diamond sharpeners.
Yeah, yeah. No, they work on everything. Like I said, with that 20-degree bevel, not only does it have mechanical advantage properties that we wanted to bring into it, it really made it maintainable, extremely easy to maintain. And quite frankly, like I said, they are so sharp without being sharp. Really, if you have a good leather paddle strop with some aluminum oxide powder, I tell you what, man, that's all it takes a lot of times. I tell you what, as a matter of fact, I just completely opened up a new account with a sharpening company. I have my own special blend of stropping powder now. We got these really awesome stropping paddles in stock. Because I really feel that stropping your broadhead as far as maintenance is the best thing you can do with a broadhead. Best thing you can do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. People don't realize how much pulling it in and putting it in your quiver takes off of the edge.
Yeah.
And a guy should touch those every so often. And, I'm of the same idea. I on my tool, it's got a little stropping edge on the back too. And that's what I'll do is I'll chromatic. And I'll just run it across that a couple times. And then another thing about here in Oregon, especially, and I don't know how you guys, how those Evolution series would, how they do with water and rain, but some of the other ones, you know, some of the press broadheads, you got to make sure that they don't rust, and that's something that happens quite a bit. So,
So to kind of answer that question, a lot of that comes down to heat treat. Number one, if you heat treat a steel well, you will bring out a lot of steels. Well, let's talk tool steels. No tool steel is a stainless except D2. D2 is a stainless tool steel. We tried D2. We wanted to make – the problem is we couldn't hold an edge retention. Yeah. Our edge retention wasn't as high. See, stainless steels are very difficult. They are great for corrosion resistance, but as far as a knife or an impact, you know, they really are lacking in a lot of things. So,
chromium soft.
Chromium is soft. Yeah, right. I mean, it has that, you know. So you've got to watch your chromium content. Yeah. So S7 does have a small marginal amount of chromium in it. We heat treated it up. If you heat treat it properly, you can kind of bring out the attributes of that chromium. But honestly, I have blades out here now. We leave them outside to make sure, you know. Now, we've had a couple sitting outside for, probably 6 months, and it's winter now, right? So it's damp. You know, there's a little bit of surface rust on them, but honestly, stropping, it takes it right off. So it doesn't get embedded right into the steel.
Right.
Now, in normal conditions, I know you're in the Pacific Northwest, you know, you're going to be fine. I mean, really, for normal hunting conditions. But, you know, people can't be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, regardless
yeah
of what broadhead you have, if
right
you're in a soaking rain, you go home.
Yeah.
Don't just hang your boat. Take your broadheads out, wipe them off, put them back in. I mean, it's not.
Look
you
at
know,
your stuff,
you
man.
You gotta use your head a little yep bit, right? But yep, any tool steel, some have a little higher chromium contents than others, but no good tool steel for broadhead applications are going to be, really, they're going to be stainless. It's going to be difficult to have your edge retention. You know, edge retention is very important too. So, but as far as ours goes, there's really no issues. And plus, we're Cerakoting them. The main is Cerakoted. So the only thing you really would have to worry about would be the bevel edge. But again, Nate, and you know this, stropping, go back, strop,
yeah,
put a mirror finish yeah on that edge. That mirror finish is a level of protection to yeah that blade edge.
Well, and it's a killer, too. I mean, I'm under the, if you don't have a sharp broadhead, you should not even be hunting as far as I'm concerned.
Right. No,
that's
you're
just
right
the way
you're
I am.
Right.
And
yeah,
I've just seen what a good sharp broadhead will do, you know. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, cool, man. I'm really excited about that Evolution series. I really like the looks of it, and both, you know, both the three blade and of course I'm kind of stuck on the two blade. But a lot of people, so I've had people ask me about blood trails on the two blades, and I tell them, well, you know, and I've shot things with Magnus over the years, and they did well. But with the single bevel, it's even, you get that blood trail a little bit quicker. You know, it seems to open things up a little bit better.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thought behind a single bevel is, in soft tissue we're talking right now, you know, it does that twisting effect. So it creates an S pattern. It doesn't create a slit, per se. So, you know, it should open up that wound and be able to dump blood. But it is very common to not have that blood,
right,
like we discussed earlier, for
fills
a few yards,
yep,
right? So, you know, you do have to pay attention to that. But listen, you know this. You've seen enough things killed. You can shoot the same broadhead in the same
yeah
animal,
yeah,
and you're going to get five times, you're going to yep get five different results. Just,
yep,
I mean, you know, you can't. At the end of the day, did the animal die? Did you find it? That's
yeah
really what's important.
Yep.
You know. Now, one thing we did do into the Evolution series, which is an attribute from the original, is our center line, our furl design, is large. It's a 350
right
diameter. So the reason behind that is, number one, for penetration of your arrow, right? So
right
there's less resistance. Number two, which a lot of people, I try to preach this, when that single bevel goes through and starts twisting, that center furl being bigger rips that center opening more.
Right.
Okay? Which means it won't seal as quick, so you'll be able to dump blood faster.
Right.
And I'm telling you, it works. It
yeah
definitely works. Then having a standard 5/16 furl the whole length,
yeah,
you know, ours is a 350. It's bigger than, it's almost a 2364. And then we taper it so it lines up with your arrow real nice. But that is a thought into these heads that you really can't see until you put them on your arrow, and you're like, oh yeah, this got some mass to it, and it's got that larger opening. So, you know, knowing that single bevels are a culprit for not laying blood right away, we put that into our application when we designed this. So.
Right, right. Well, Jason, we've been on here for a little bit. I was going to ask you a little bit about your hunting plans this next year. Are you going to try to get out west at all?
Actually, I am. Yeah, I haven't been out west for a couple of years. Well, COVID last year kind of hindered a lot of travel plans. So
everybody.
I spent a lot of time over here in the Northeast hunting black bear, basically, last year. But this year, I have a couple whitetail trips planned, obviously. I mean, I live out east here,
sure,
you know, so
sure
whitetails are a big thing for us. So we're going to be hitting PA a lot. Of course, I live here in Ohio. And then I'm still debating whether to go after black bear again. I went twice last year. I mean, you know, I might want to take a break this year from black bear, but I am going to a ranch here soon, and we're going to test broadheads and I'm going on a buffalo hunt.
Oh,
so I'll be
cool
hunting a buffalo. Yeah. That's actually in 2 weeks. And then, I was supposed to go on a moose hunt to Newfoundland, but because of all the COVID crap going on, and I don't even know what's going to happen with traveling,
right.
I am going to hold off on Canada this year, and I'm actually going to travel out to Colorado, meet up a friend, and we're going to hunt elk for a couple weeks,
right,
and possibly mule deer, too, this year. So that's what I have planned for right now.
Right on. So your buffalo hunt, are you going to film any of that?
Yes, I am. I'm filming the whole thing.
Right on.
Yeah, so we're testing arrow shafts. I'm not going to say a partnership, but I have a very good friend that owns Sirius Archery products, Sirius Arrows. So he has a couple new arrows coming out. He's going to be testing his. And I'll, obviously, with all my new heads, we want to get a buffalo down with the head. And then we're going to, once it's down, we're going to test impact and bone shattering effects and stuff with all the other lines of our heads, too. And plus, there's a couple other animals we can hunt on it. So, it is a ranch-style hunt, but it's about 2,000 acres.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use my recurve, obviously, on the buffalo. So.
Well, and buffalo are, we have a few of those places around in we used to. And I was actually looking at price per pound of buffalo and then price for going out and doing it. And I was thinking, that's a pretty good payback.
It is, man. And you get to have fun. I'm telling you, where I'm going, we got kind of we got a little bit of a discounted rate. Being in the industry, we're bringing a bunch of people down.
Right.
But, you couldn't do this hunt, butcher it yourself, you can't go to the grocery store and buy it for the cost I'm doing this for, and I'm going to have fun doing it.
And you get the skin, and you get,
Absolutely, so. I'm going to be making a blanket and everything I can hide. So I'm really looking for. I've always wanted to hunt buffalo.
Me too.
I just never had the opportunity, but, when you go out west, you have to apply for tags and everything, and it's very difficult to get them. So most guys, when you see pictures of them killing buffalo, they're doing it on a ranch somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just, regardless how big the ranch is, that they are killing them on a ranch.
So. Yeah, you just try to pick a big ranch, and...
Well, right, and make the challenge yourself. I'm gonna make sure I am within 20 yards.
Yep.
I'm using a recurve.
Yeah.
I wanted to use a longbow, but I can't get... I haven't shot longbow for a couple of years. I've been really into the ILF recurves.
Yeah.
So I am getting a longbow built this year to kind of my specs. But it's not ready, so it's too late in the game for me to try to tune a longbow.
Yeah, so. Cool. That when you said buffalo, I was like, because that's something I've always wanted to do. And moose is another one.
Moose is definitely. I really enjoy moose hunting a lot.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it out of Fairbanks and fly out from Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And I have some friends up there, and I have family up there, so it would be really easy for me to do.
So I've been
looking into it. Yeah. Logistically and money wise, you're looking, I think for $5,000, I think a guy could go moose hunting up there if he's willing to, beat himself up.
Yeah.
A moose hunt.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do a moose hunt for about $5,000.
Yeah.
Or, depending on how much you're willing to suffer.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm 50 now, so I got to hurry up and do it before I don't want to suffer anymore.
Well, there's other hunts, but the thing is you pay a little more of a premium for the non-suffering hunts.
Yeah, I know. But part of it is suffering for me.
I agree.
Spending the night, and I got one of those new TP tents, hot tents.
Yeah.
And it would just be, I don't know. That's something I'd really like to do before I get to where I don't want to suffer anymore.
And Nate, 90% of this is about the adventure, sure, killing the animal and actually hunting is, but man, the adventure, that's why I'm really drawn to moose hunting is my last two have been up in upper Canada and they've all been self-guided and I haven't kind of done yet, but I don't regret any one of those hunts. Fly drop in and a remote cabin, you're off grid. It was just awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah, I moose hunted once, and that was just because our ship was in dry dock. We lost a main bearing when I was, and we went into Seward, Alaska, and we're like, okay, now what do we do? We went down, and they said, here's some moose tags.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, because in the military, you're considered a resident up there.
And,
and they're like, yeah, there's a moose season open, but you have to shoot it between this size and this size, and guess what we saw? We saw tons of huge bulls that we couldn't shoot. It was a good time.
That's always the way it goes.
Yeah, but it was so much different. I'm here I am, biggest thing I've ever seen was an elk, and you walk out there and you start seeing like moose tracks.
Yeah.
it's like
oh, they're huge.
Yeah, it's like stepping in Jurassic Park or something. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. They're massive animals. And to be able to take one with a stick and string,
oh, man.
Regardless if it's a recarve or a longbow,
yeah,
bow arrows or carbon arrows, I mean, yeah. Man, to break that 20-yard mark and kill it, that's a rush that I'm still trying to accomplish. I mean, I was, like I said, I was supposed to go to Newfoundland this year, but I had I made the decision to postpone until next year just because of the travel. And I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen yet, and I can't wait till the last minute. There's too much logistics involved.
Yep. And you want to make sure that it's not something that we do every day. So you want to make sure that everything goes as smooth as you can make it go. Yep.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So my big hunts this year is the buffalo and then the elk hunt this year.
Oh man, I am stoked about your buffalo hunt. I can't wait to watch what happens with that.
Yeah, me too. I'm not one. I am a great shooter alone, just like a lot of trad guys. But you put me in an audience, I just crash under pressure.
I hear you.
So I just hope I can hold my shit together.
Yeah, I hear you.
Knowing that the camera's sitting behind me, you know what I mean.
And with the bear hunts. So did you actually harvest one last year at all? Or
yes, I did. I harvested one in the spring. We went back, it was in Maine, and then we went back to Maine, same outfitter, in the fall because of my plans changing. We went back there in the fall, and I told the outfitter, look, I'm not going to shoot anything unless it's X pounds. I want to make sure I get a big one.
Yeah, don't want to shoot a little guy.
Yeah, so I was holding off for when I got bigger in the spring. Unfortunately, I didn't even see a bear because little did we know, it was the fourth week of hunting. They run dogs. The hounds can... And they had those bears so
moving.
So oh, they were all, and they would not come to the bait unless it was midnight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was a terrible hunt as far as I mean, it was fun going up, but I love Maine. Maine is an awesome, awesome state. My fall hunt sucked.
Yeah. So
but I did shoot one in the spring, so I'm not complaining.
Right.
I did shoot a nice one in the spring.
What head did you use on that? I'm just curious here because bears are a big deal when it comes to shooting them with a bow because they have so much fat.
They have so much fat.
Right? Fat and hair.
Well, so I shot a prototype at the bear.
Oh, okay.
It was not the Evolution 200, but it was the same profile, but it was a 250 grain head. It was just a little bit longer, but the width was the same. So, it was very similar to what the Evolution actually what the Evolution 250 is going to be.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of what it was. Now, I have taken it with the meathead before. It worked phenomenal.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's shot placement. You can't shoot it too low.
Yep.
You can't shoot it too high. You got to get them right where – and you got to get two holes in a bear. You absolutely have to get two holes in a bear.
Yeah.
And they die pretty quick. You put two holes in them in relatively the right spot, you're going to kill that bear.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of times, though, they're tough. They're not tough in that way, but they don't leave a lot of blood, and when they die, a lot of times they'll die underneath a stump or something.
They can be difficult to find. And you're right, they might have good blood, but the problem is all that fat.
It
seals
up
the cut. You got all that fur, it's soaking up that blood. It they can be difficult to track, so it's very important to get two holes in that bear as fast as possible.
I'm a firm believer in that too. That's sorry about that, but I wanted to, because there's not a lot of guys that are getting a lot of bears. We out here, we have tons of bears in Oregon.
Yeah.
Anybody listening to this, come up to Oregon and shoot bears. We need you to shoot bears. You could kill three a year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and
wow.
For an out-of-state guy, it's like $250.
I'm coming. I'll come next year.
Right on. Yeah. Spring season starts, and spring bear hunting is probably my favorite because that's when they're on the grass.
Yeah.
And we find some big old boars on the grass. We have yet to kill one. Jerry Goins and I, we get into them. But, they get on the grass, and so what you do is you just start glassing. We can't use bears, and we can't use bait, or we can't use dogs, and we can't use bait.
So same here in PA. Yeah, we can't do that here in PA. Either.
So you got to do spot and stalk and get in front of them and stuff. So that's something that if you guys are listening to this, contact me and I'll hook you up. I'll tell you how to do it, and I'll even send you pins.
I think we're going to talk here in the future, Nate, because I love bears.
I do too.
You know, there's something about
bears.
They're
cool.
They're just so majestic to me.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, just like a moose. Like a moose and a bear to me are like, you know, just the animal. And and the meat's good too. I mean, anybody that says bear meat is not good, they're wrong. It's very mild too. It's a very easy meat to eat. I always wanted to do more of a spot and stalk spring bear where you can glass the hillsides and find, you know, they're going to come out to that grass, like you said, but I just never made it a point to do it, but I might have to take you up on that one of these next year or so and make some plans to do that. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Jerry and I have a ball doing it. We do it almost every year. If you look at some of our YouTube videos, you'll see quite a few bears. It's a lot of fun. We really enjoy it. The fall bears are a little bit harder on us. You know, you got to go hit the berry patches and stuff like that. But we're usually like scouting for elk, and that's how we bear hunt. But
I got you. Yeah, just stumble across them. Or something.
And if I got serious about it, I'm sure we could really find some bears.
Yeah. Right. Right. No, that's cool. Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah, I mean, in PA we have a very good black bear herd. I mean, there's a lot of black bear population here. But like you said, we can't bait, we can't run hounds. We can only hunt them in the fall, and the season typically is after the berries are already gone. So they're very difficult to find. So most guys do drives, or they're more successful with rifle. If you're archery hunting them in PA, most of the time, unless you live in the areas where there's a heavy density, you're going to lock into a bear. You're not going to hunt them and find them.
Right.
You know? So. But that is one of my goals, is to finally take one with NPA with a bow. But it's definitely a task that's going to take a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, just for example, to meet our management levels, our spring tags here in the southwest portion, they give out 4,400 spring tags. And that's to meet the management objective. And we kill about 300 a year.
Oh, my, really?
Yeah, that's how many bears there are. And it's becoming a problem, quite honestly. I have bears where I'm living right now. I have a bear on my camera within a half a mile. And we got a lot of bears around. So if you want to come out, anybody wants to come out, give me a holler. I will help you guys out.
That sounds like a really good plan.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
You know, in the adventure of spot and stalk and hunt, you know, I mean, hunting bait is one thing. It is a management tool. It's a way you hunt them, because sometimes in certain areas you can't hunt them any other way.
Right. But
being able to spot and stalk on black bear I think that is just an awesome, especially in the spring when everything's coming back to life. The weather's relatively nice. You know, it just, I don't know. It sounds like paradise to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty, well, I sure appreciate you guys coming on and letting us know about what you got going on there. And we're going to have you back on here, because it sounds like there's some other things coming out, and we're going to have to talk about that. And one thing, if you would, if you come back on after you go buffalo hunting or bison hunting, I would really, really enjoy talking about that.
Oh, we absolutely can. I'm leaving in 2 weeks, and I can absolutely come on and talk about it. I'm excited, man. I'm really looking forward to that hunt. So absolutely.
Cool.
And also, you know, we didn't have enough time, but I am working on revamping the original classics with new steel as well. So,
gotcha.
You know, I didn't forget about our roots. I didn't forget about our roots, our 3-to-1. So I am working on, always working on making that product even better than it already is. So. And we could talk about that later too, but there's a lot of stuff we're doing with that steel as well.
Well, yeah, you know, I've shot the meathead quite a little bit and played with it, and it's kind of the same thing, just not the same steel, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. So no, the meathead is just like the toughhead. The meathead is carbon steel. The toughhead is stainless steel.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, that's one of the things that I with the meathead, I guys that haven't seen them, I don't know if they're living under a rock or something, but with the meathead, the thing that I really liked about it, and one of the things I like about all of the tough heads, are the bevels that you have on the tips. I've broken a lot of 3-to-1s right there at the tip. So, and yeah, I don't think you'll have that problem.
No, most of them, unless you're passing through and slanting a rock or something, they're going to hold up under normal use, no problem. And we back everything with a lifetime warranty to the original owner. So,
if something
happens and you damage that broadhead, I mean, we're going to replace it. I mean, fortunately, I don't replace many a year, and even the ones I do, I probably didn't have to. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I've had calls, guys pass through an animal. They killed the animal. They found it. But as it passed through, it slammed into a rock, and it, like you said, it bent the tip. I didn't have to replace that, Nate, but I did.
Yeah.
I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, all right. Let's get you back on here. I know we didn't cover everything, but I'm going to let you get going. I'm sure you're pretty busy. But thanks for coming on, and I really enjoyed sitting here and talking to you about it, and I can't wait to see what happens with your hunts this year. Please light up Instagram with them.
I will, Nate. No problem.
Right on. All right. Thanks a bunch. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to this edition of Barebow Hunter Podcast. If you guys like this, could you do me a favor? Can you give us, I think it's like a 5-star rating on Apple. I don't know how Spotify works. I don't know how any of it works, but do what you do. If you could, because it helps us get the word out, and we really like to bring guys on and help do this stuff. So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it. All right, Jason, we'll talk to you later. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nate.
Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Barebow Hunter Podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, backcountry hunters and anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Barebow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Barebow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Barebow goodness in them, Barebow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.